Hello and welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today. It is Friday, June 18, and I'm your reader, Kathleen. From the front page of the Gazette today, new Back the Blue Bill boosts police protections. This story by Rob Boschart from the Gazette's Des Moines Bureau. Flanked by a roomful of uniformed law officers from around Iowa, Governor Kim Reynolds on Thursday signed a Back the Blue Bill that boosts support and legal protections for law enforcement, as well as increases punishments for people convicted of rioting and makes it easier to charge protesters with crimes. Iowa's law enforcement will always have my respect, and I will always have their back, the governor told law officers and cadets at the Iowa Law Enforcement Academy before signing into law Senate File 342, a bill that will shield law enforcement officers from some lawsuits in the form of qualified immunity and raises the penalties for a host of criminal behaviors, including rioting, criminal mischief, disorderly conduct, assault, harassment, and eluding law officers or interfering with officers trying to control public order. According to the nonpartisan Legislative Service Agency, the measure expands sick leave and workers' comp rights for public safety employees. It also expands criminal mischief to include acts that damage or deface public property, including monuments and statues, and makes it a crime of disorderly conduct for a protester to obstruct a public roadway. Reynolds said the bill fulfilled a commitment she made last January in her condition of the state address to protect law officers who have come under vicious attack, but Democrats and racial justice advocates who had worked with the governor on a policing reform measure a year ago to ban chokeholds and begin to raise accountability for law officers decried Thursday's action as a giant step backwards in efforts to bridge Iowa's racial divides. "This legislation has shown that we have gone backwards," said Representative Phyllis Thede, Democrat Bettendorf, who added she was frustrated and dismayed by the passage and signing of SF 342. "We have again divided Democrats and Republicans. I think that sends a terrible, terrible message. The public peace is too important and the safety of our officers too precious to tolerate destructive behavior." In her remarks before signing the bill, Reynolds pushed back on criticism by saying, "There is no contradiction whatsoever between steadfast support for honorable and selfless law enforcement officers, the vast majority, and a commitment to improving law enforcement." She pledged to continue working to end racial profiling by police and pursue other recommendations made by a working group that did not see legislative action in 2021. Reynolds noted the new law contains provisions that ban discrimination in the enforcement of the law and establishes a process for citizens who believe their rights have been violated to file a complaint with the Iowa Attorney General's office. Reynolds said the measure also marks a historic commitment by making rioting a felony, increasing penalties on a range of other destructive criminal behaviors, establishing qualified immunity for officers against some type of legal actions, increasing due process protections for law enforcement, and attempting to hold local governments accountable for actions deemed to prevent local law enforcement from doing their jobs. "If you riot and if you loot, if you attack our law officers, then you'll be punished to the fullest extent of the law," the governor said during Thursday's signing ceremony. "The public peace is too important and the safety of our officers too precious to tolerate destructive behavior." Reynolds also used the occasion to sign House File 708, a separate bill creating a law enforcement equipment fund with an initial $5 million investment. Judy Bradshaw, a former Des Moines police chief who directs the state's Law Enforcement Academy, said the backdrop of law officers and cadets from a variety of agencies, communities, and backgrounds was fitting for what she called this special occasion to sign one of the most important, significant bills to impact and support law enforcement. "It's truly an historical moment for law enforcement and the citizens of Iowa," she added, in applauding the governor's leadership in backing law enforcement. "Thank you for your services, especially in this difficult and unpredictable time," Reynolds told the assembled group. Your job has never been harder or more complex. It's taking place against the backdrop of political tension that you didn't ask for and did nothing to encourage. But it's also never been more important because the best counter-argument to political attacks is quiet professionalism, the kind that fuses duty and connection, justice and mercy, and enforcement and compassion. Back the Blue empowers you to make that counter-argument even more effectively than you already have. Legislative Democrats criticized the GOP governor and majority Republican legislative leaders for walking away from a call for unity over racial justice issues and signing a bill that a nonpartisan legislative analysis projected would have a disproportionate negative impact on minority Iowans. Instead of furthering an important discussion about anti-racial profiling measures and modernizing our public safety departments, Governor Reynolds took a giant step backwards, said Representative Ross Wilburn, an Ames legislator who also is chair of the Iowa Democratic Party. 1 year ago, the governor signed legislation that banned most chokeholds and made a promise to Iowans that this is not the end of our work, it's just the beginning. We now know that statement was a lie. Instead, she ignored the call to duty. Wilburn said Thursday's action broke a promise and broke the trust of Iowans who were more than willing to work in a transformative, bipartisan way for change that would have a lasting, positive effect on Iowa. CD and Representative Ruth Ann Gaines, Democrat from Des Moines, said they detected a change in tone among legislative Republicans this past session on a number of issues that dealt with diversity training, critical race theory education, voting rights, and other bills that sent a veiled, negative, dire tone and message to young Iowans and people outside the state that we don't want to grow, we want to maintain status quo. That was the big message of this session. We don't see a need for diversity. We don't see a need for collaboration. It is our way or the highway, said Gaines. Added Thede, if this is not a racist tone, I am not sure what is and is not. Senate Majority Leader Jack Whitaker, Republican from Ankeny, who attended Thursday's signing event, said the legislation fulfilled a GOP promise made that we would back the blue. But Senate Minority Leader Zach Walls of Coralville said the bill was more aimed at making political points, not making our communities safer. Jeff Kaufman, a former legislator who chairs the Republican Party of Iowa, said SF 342 makes clear Iowa supports law enforcement, when too often now the loudest voices are demonizing them, while Mark Stringer, executive director of the ACLU of Iowa, called the bill an effort to shut down public criticism of abuses by law enforcement. In another front-page story, U.S. Labor Chief touts Biden's jobs plan. This story by Vanessa Miller for the Gazette. President Joe Biden's proposed American jobs plan includes a section on community colleges, designated $12 billion to boost their infrastructure and technology, and charging states to use their cut to improve access and opportunities at the higher education hubs. But community colleges like Kirkwood in Cedar Rapids really hold some relevance to nearly all aspects of the overall $2.7 trillion jobs plan, which proposed to fix transit systems, provide clean drinking water and high-speed internet, modernize and retrofit homes, schools, and childcare facilities, and create more good quality and good paying jobs in a safe space, among other things. Everything in that school ties into everything in the jobs plan, U.S. Secretary of Labor Martin Walsh said Thursday after touring Kirkwood Community College. Citing Kirkwood's programming related to transportation, welding, plumbing, carpentry, energy, and more, Walsh said, I was super impressed with that school today. As Walsh flew to the corridor to build support for the jobs idea, congressional Democrats were trying to form a plan to get key elements of it and a $1.9 trillion American Families Plan that includes free community college tuition passed with just 51 votes in the U.S. Senate and not risking an almost certain filibuster from the GOP opponents opposed to such high spending on longtime liberal priorities. after following up his Kirkwood visit with one to the University of Iowa's Medical Education Research Facility, he said, "I'm super impressed with this school today, too." Walsh walked through the lab of UI Microbiology and Immunology Professor and University Distinguished Chair Stanley Perlman, who until recently was one of just 10 full-time coronavirus virologists in the world. Perlman's decades of work paved the way for the U.S. science community's COVID-19 response and rapid vaccine development. And Walsh on Thursday said he's not just touring the Iowa institutions to discuss the president's proposals and listen to thoughts and concerns. "I really wanted to come by and say thank you," said Walsh, who was serving as Boston mayor until Biden named him Secretary of Labor, "because some amazing things happened in this building and that building across the street that impacted us in the city of Boston and impacted people all across this country." In his brief remarks, Perlman expressed his gratitude for the federal funding that supported his research. "The reason we could do all this research was because we had some good support from the National Institute of Health," Perlman said. And Walsh, in talking with the Gazette on Thursday, said sustained federal support for research is a top priority. "This administration is focused on science," he said, citing the former presidential administration's proposals to cut research funding. "I think that what the last administration was going to do was very short-sighted. We have to stay ahead of manufacturing and technology and science." During a roundtable at Kirkwood, Walsh connected with students who increased their skills and entered new careers by merging their education and work through the campus's apprentice programming. With so many jobs lost during the pandemic, and technological advances opening new work opportunities at a rapid clip, Walsh and the students agreed colleges should expand their apprenticeship instruction. "That's exactly what he is trying to do," Walsh said of Biden. The secretary also spoke about the need for flexibility, like for non-traditional adult students, and other supports like childcare. And he touted the need to remove barriers to access by, among other things, making community college tuition-free. Biden in April pitched a proposal to cover 2 years of tuition at community colleges and extend the same benefit to low- and middle-income students attending historically black colleges and universities, tribal colleges, and other minority-serving institutions. "Meaning this is for everyone," Walsh said, "and the reason for it is to create skills and opportunities." Moving over to the Iowa Today page, Shelter House breaks ground on 501 Project, this story by Caleb McCullough. The Iowa City Shelter House on Thursday broke ground on a Housing First project that will provide permanent, supportive housing for the city's homeless population. This is the second such project for Shelter House. The first, Cross Park Place, opened in 2019 at 820 Cross Park Avenue, south of Highway 6. The new building at 501 Southgate Avenue, adjacent to Shelter House, will have 36 apartments, adding to the 24 units at Cross Park Place. Construction of this three-story building is expected to take about a year. The Housing First model places chronically homeless people in permanent residential housing without barriers to entry. It provides housing first, then addresses behavioral mental health problems or addiction issues. Having a place to live provides people with the stability to resolve their problems or issues, Shelter House Director of Development Christine Ralston said. "Consistently requiring that someone heal before they be housed, it just doesn't work," she said. "We know that housing is actually what allows for stabilization. Rent is 30% of a tenant's income and is adjusted if a tenant loses a source of income." Iowa Finance Authority Executive Director Debbie Durham said at the groundbreaking that Shelter House has been a good partner in the past and that building affordable housing projects is important for Iowa's economic success. "Housing is an issue for Iowa, and it's across the continuum," she said. "It's at the homeless level, but it's all the way up to market rate, and so we have to deal with it at every single point of entry." The Iowa Finance Authority awarded $2.7 million to the project, the same sum it awarded to the construction of Cross Park Place. Other support comes from the Johnson County Housing Trust Fund. Still, Shelter House Executive Director Chrissy Canganelli said the nonprofit is taking on significant debt to finance the project. "We understand this housing is addressing an urgent need in our community. It's a life-saving intervention," she said. "So that's why we're moving forward, even though we are taking on substantial debt." Before the ceremony, volunteers gathered at the Iowa Antique Car Museum in Coralville to build some of the building's interior walls. The volunteer build was the idea of Mike Hodge, president of Hodge Construction, the company managing the build, Canganelli said. The volunteer work was a way, she said, to share the experience with a broader group of folks throughout the community that don't ordinarily get to engage in this hands-on in the work that we do. And in another Iowa Today story, the Iowa City Mayor to seek re-election, this story by Riley Wilson. Iowa City Mayor Bruce Teague on Thursday announced he will seek re-election to the council in November. Teague was elected to an at-large council seat in a 2018 special election, and his fellow council members elected him mayor in 2020. "I hope the people of Iowa City have seen how hard I have worked to listen to all voices and will give me the opportunity to continue serving them as we've moved past this difficult time into a period of growth, healing, and betterment for our future," Teague said in a statement. Teague, an Iowa City resident since 1993, is the owner and CEO of Caring Hands and More, a home health care company in Iowa City. Teague is one of three council members whose terms expire this year. Council member Susan Mims, who represents District B, has announced her intent to retire at the end of her term. Mayor Pro Tem Mazahir Salih's at-large term also concludes at the end of the year. Megan Alter, a manager at ACT, and Human Rights Commissioner Jason Glass have announced plans to run for seats on the council. City and school board elections will be November 2. And a community organizer is to run for Iowa Senate. This story by Michaela Ram. Sammy Sheets of Cedar Rapids, a political activist who has worked in state and presidential campaigns, will run for the state Senate seat being vacated by Senator Rob Hogg in 2022. Sheets, age 25, will run as a Democrat for the Senate District 33 seat in the Iowa legislature. "I came back to Iowa to fight for working families, and I've heard from families across District 33. They feel like the middle class has been shrinking," Sheets said in a news release. "The state legislature has made it harder and harder for working families to earn a good living and make ends meet. We need new leaders that are intent on changing this reality, making Iowa a place with a strong middle class where all people can thrive." Hogg, a Democrat from Cedar Rapids, announced earlier this week he would not seek re-election. Sheets has most recently worked on the Iowa campaign staff for Joe Biden for 2020, serving as the Iowa Deputy Coalition's director. He also was the Iowa Constituency Outreach Director for Bernie Sanders' 2020 bid during the Iowa caucuses. Sheets previously led community organizing efforts for Fred Hubbell, the Democratic nominee for Iowa governor in 2018. A Cedar Rapids native, Sheets holds a degree in government and history from Georgetown University. "Iowa used to be a place where if you worked hard and played by the rules, you could make it in life," Sheets said. "We know that's no longer the case, and that is what we must change. Hardworking Iowans deserve a fair shake." Brianna Oxley, age 30, a Cedar Rapids Community School District social studies teacher, also is running for the seat Hogg has held since 2007. And an Iowa pleads guilty to shooting a black girl. This incident happened in December at a Trump rally in Des Moines. A supporter of former President Donald Trump has pleaded guilty to felony charges for firing his handgun into a car full of black girls who were arguing with pro-Trump agitators near the Iowa Capitol last December, injuring one. Michael McKinney, age 26, pleaded guilty Wednesday to intimidation with a dangerous weapon and willful injury, charges that each carry up to 10 years in prison. He's expected to receive a prison term at his August 9 sentencing, but the parole board may determine how long he actually serves. Under a plea agreement that a prosecutor called generous, the state will dismiss 4 charges, including attempted murder, and won't seek sentencing enhancement that would require McKinney to serve a mandatory minimum of 5 years on each count before becoming eligible for parole. Another top story in the Iowa Today section, Cedar Rapids Downtown Farmers Market is back. 100 vendors from farmers, artists, and crafts, people to, 100 vendors from farmers, artists, and craftspeople to a COVID-19 vaccination clinic will be on hand Saturday to help kick off Cedar Rapids' 16th year of its Downtown Farmers Market, open from 7:30 a.m. until noon. That's a significant jump from the 2020 season's 30 to 50 vendors. Stalls will be socially distanced on either side of the street. Attendees and vendors are encouraged to wear masks. Attendance is free, and the markets will be held from July 3 and 17, August 7 and 21, September 4, 18, and October 2. We've definitely heard that the community is ready to get back and be in person and have our street lined with vendors again, Cedar Rapids Metro Economic Alliance events planner Ellie Evans said. The Gazette is a media sponsor of this event. Moving on to the Insight page, the Gazette's own editorial, Caucuses Threatened Again. Nevada's governor this month signed a bill scrapping the state's caucuses, creating a primary, and leapfrogging that contest to the front of the presidential nomination calendar. It would be the first in the nation Nevada primary. That obviously isn't sitting well with party leaders in Iowa and New Hampshire, the current sites of the first-in-the-nation caucuses and primary. The calendar debate is mainly among Democrats who have come to regard caucuses as archaic events that lack the capacity for early voting and are inaccessible to shift workers, disabled people, and others who can't show up for a 3-hour political meeting. The 2020 Democratic caucuses, which saw an embarrassing breakdown in the Iowa Democratic Party's effort to report reliable results, further fueled the anti-caucus push. Criticism of the caucus process is added on to the traditional knocks on Iowa's lack of racial diversity. We've seen this scuffling at the presidential starting line before, and the leadoff lineup has always survived. New Hampshire has its own state law requiring that it hold the first primary, and state officials have shown a willingness to move the primary date as early as it takes to be first. New Hampshire's aggression also hems in Iowa. A primary would be superior to caucuses in terms of participation, accessibility, and providing clear, understandable results. But if Iowa chooses a primary, it runs afoul of New Hampshire. Bottom line, the final decision on who goes first is up to national party leaders. Republicans have shown no interest in changing the calendar, and potential GOP candidates are already visiting the state. National Democrats need to settle this sooner than later. If leaders decide to shuffle the calendar to put a primary in a more diverse state first, so be it. But if our first-in-the-nation caucuses survive this latest battle, National Democrats should get to work in cooperation with Iowa Democrats to make caucus changes with the goal of making them more accessible. In 2020, according to a state Democratic caucus's postmortem, it was meddling and lack of cooperation from the national party that contributed to caucus night problems. That can't happen again. As for all the past instances when the caucuses were threatened, they have always had one big advantage over their detractors. No one has been able to come up with a better, more acceptable plan for picking a nominee. If that continues, Iowa is likely to remain first. And again, that is from the Gazette's own editorial board. One community letter today, hungry kids in Iowa need help this summer. For the 1 in 8 kids who may face hunger today in Iowa, summer is usually the hungriest time of year. This summer, however, may be a different story because new benefits and temporary nutrition waivers are helping to reach even more kids with the food they need. For example, they allow parents to pick up meals for the week or allow organizations to drop off meals at a child's home. In fact, because of these types of flexibilities, summer meal programs in Iowa served more than 2 million more meals to kids in need last year. This matters. Through my work with No Kid Hungry and Project Rooted, I've learned just how important it is that kids have consistent access to healthy meals when schools are out of session or temporarily closed. But these measures are temporary. It's time for Congress to update and modernize the summer meals program by permanently implementing policies that have fed so many kids during the COVID crisis, additional summer grocery benefits, and allowing meals to come to kids to help overcome transportation barriers, and making them part of future solutions. Senators Joni Ernst and Chuck Grassley have an opportunity to support proven solutions like a nationwide summer EBT program and non-congregate meal options through the Child Nutrition Reauthorization Process or the American Families Plan proposal. Hungry kids in Iowa and across the country can't wait. And that's signed by Kevin Sharp from Dubuque. Adam Sullivan's At Liberty column today is titled A Partisan Blame Game Over Children. More than a dozen unaccompanied migrant children were secretly flown to Iowa this spring, a troubling example of President Joe Biden's failing immigration policy. State leaders were not notified of the stop in Des Moines. For weeks after the state became aware, federal immigration officials denied any connection to the flight. Sure, it's less than ideal for the federal government to move around children in the dark of night with no oversight or accountability, and maybe it was unwise for the feds to mislead members of Congress. But the real problem, according to Democrats, is Governor Kim Reynolds. She's only focused on dividing and distracting Iowans from her own record and using a fake crisis to further attacks on our friends and neighbors. Iowa Democrats want to solve the real problems within our own state borders, not play partisan politics that only seek to divide us further, Ross Wilburn, chairman of the Iowa Democratic Party, said in a statement. Yes, Reynolds is using the children as political pawns, and her opponents are more than happy to do the same in a bid to divert attention from their own leaders' ineptitude. In April, Reynolds was widely and righteously panned for saying migrant kids are not our problem and rejecting a federal request to help house them. The Iowa governor's refusal to offer assistance to children in need is wrong. But it's not what's stopping Biden from effectively addressing the immigration situation. You can call them cages or detention facilities, depending on the party in power, but the reality is much the same. Kids are being held in unsuitable conditions for days and weeks, and our government has no real plan to respond. Worse yet, prevailing policy is likely exacerbating the crisis. One reason parents send their children unaccompanied to the United States is that the children are likely to get better treatment than the adults, giving rise to a practice called self-separation. If we opened legal pathways to adults, many of these families probably would remain intact. Well past his 100-day benchmark in office, Biden has made some progress at reversing the Trump administration's immigration restrictions, but the pace of change has been sluggish. Not until this month did the Biden administration formally end Trump's Remain in Mexico policy and ease controversial barriers for asylum seekers. Another Trump holdover, known as Title 42 expulsion, remains in place. That policy allows the government to expel migrants arriving at the border even if they would otherwise be eligible to apply for legal status. It was imposed at the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic under the guise of protecting public health. If it ever was necessary, it surely is obsolete now. The new administration is not quite like the old one, but they're more similar than it might seem. I want to be clear to folks in this region who are thinking about making that dangerous trek to the United States-Mexico border. Do not come, Vice President Kamala Harris said during a trip to Guatemala this month. It's the country is full all over again, but now with a D behind the names. And again, that is the column from Adam Sullivan. You are listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today, Friday, June 18, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. And now we turn to today's obituaries in the other notices. From Bellevue, Wanda L. Curtis, age 86, died Wednesday, June 16, Carson's Celebration of Life Service, Maquoketa. Also in Belle Plaine, Earlene M. Wheeler, age 76, died June 13, Iowa Cremation, Cedar Rapids. In Cedar Rapids, Larry Cook, age 66, died Thursday, June 17, Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service, Cedar Rapids. Again in Cedar Rapids, Howard Lanham, age 88, died Thursday, June 17, Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service. In Elkader, Lillian Stintz, age 99, died Saturday, June 12, Leonard Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service, Elkader. In Monmouth, Ronald D. Stender, age 75, died Wednesday, June 16, Carson's Celebration of Life Center, Maquoketa. From North Liberty, Katie Melinda Neal, age 49, died Tuesday, June 15, Lansing Funeral and Cremation Service, Iowa City. In South Amana, Arlene S. Ehrman, age 96, died Wednesday, June 16, Closter Funeral Home, Marengo. And in Tama, Mary Jane Duggan, age 76, died Wednesday, June 16, Cruz Phillip Funeral Home, Tama, Toledo. Moving now to the regular notices from Adelissa, Marilee Dotson, age 83, passed away Wednesday, June 16, from complications of heart failure at Mercy Hospital, Iowa City. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. Tuesday, June 22nd at Fry Funeral Home. Burial will follow at West Liberty City Cemetery. Visitation will be held Monday from 4 to 7 at Fry's. Online condolences may be shared at fryfuneralhome.com. From Iowa City, Melissa Marie Anderson, age 41, passed away Tuesday, June 15, at home in Iowa City. Private funeral mass will be at St. Mary's Catholic Church in Solon. Private family interment will be at St. Mary's Cemetery. Brosh Chapel and the Ava Center in Solon is in charge of arrangements. From Shellsburg, Leona Helen Waters, age 89, of Shellsburg, formerly of Cedar Rapids, passed away Monday, November 23. The family will be having a celebration of life at 11 a.m. June 25th. At the Mount Clark Cemetery in Central City. Luncheon will follow immediately at the United Church of Christ, Central City. And in Cedar Rapids, David Christopher Steele, age 69, passed away Wednesday, June 16th at the Dennis and Donna Oldorf Hospice House of Mercy in Hiawatha following a brief illness. Memorial service will be at 1 p.m. Monday, June 21st at the TN Funeral Home. From Cedar Rapids, Judy Walter, age 75, died Wednesday, June 16th. Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Cedar Rapids is assisting the family. Memorials may be directed to the family. Please share a memory of Judy at murdochfuneralhome.com under obituaries. From Washington, Stanley Lou Bauer, age 80, of Washington, passed away Tuesday, June 16th. At the Halicken House in Washington. A memorial visitation with the family present will be held from 1 to 2:30 p.m. Saturday, June 26th at the Jones and Eden Funeral Home. Private family interment will be held at Elm Grove Cemetery in Washington. Memorials have been established for Hospice of Washington County. Online condolences can be sent for Stan's family through the web at www.jonesfh.com. From Monticello, Maria White, age 71, died Sunday, April 5th at Jones Regional Medical Center in Anamosa following a brief illness. A public visitation will be held from 9:30 to 11 Saturday, June 19th at Sacred Heart Catholic Church in Monticello, where a mass of Christian burial will commence at 11 a.m. The Reverend Paul Baldwin will officiate. And from Cedar Rapids, Mark Edward Thompson, age 66, of Cedar Rapids, passed away Tuesday, June 15th. A celebration of life will be held at a future date. Iowa Cremation is assisting the family. Moving to the sports page, this front page story by Jeff Linder about girls basketball. Martinson lands his dream job coaching Marion. Henry Martinson has his dream job. "It's what I've always wanted," said Martinson, who was selected as head girls basketball coach at Marion High School on Thursday, pending board approval. "This is the job for me. It has definitely been a crazy couple weeks. I had an interview and I thought it went pretty well. When I got the offer, I didn't need any time to decide." Martinson, age 47 and a 1993 Marion graduate, succeeds Josh Claypool, who resigned in May after two seasons and a 35-11 record. Martinson was an assistant for Claypool during the 2019-2020 season. In the two seasons before that, and also in 2020-21, Martinson was the head coach at Central City. The Wildcats were 12-10 last season, their first winning record in 10 years. Central City was 27-39 in Martinson's three seasons. Back at Marion, Martinson will captain a ship that has been cruising nicely. The Indians, soon to become the Wolves, have won or shared six consecutive WAMAC Conference Division titles and have averaged 20.7 wins through the last seven seasons. Marion was 14-9 last year and returned 72% of its scoring for 2021-22. Four starters will be back, led by 4A third-team All-Stater Sadie Strucken, a senior-to-be who averaged 10.6 points per game. Other key returners include Madison Pryor, who will be a senior, and Reagan Rice and Ella Bockenstedt, juniors. "I feel really fortunate to be part of this program," Martin said. "I'll make some tweaks and we'll have a little bit of a different look. We've relied on the three-pointer for so long, we're going to try to manufacture points some other ways." Marion Athletics Director Mike Manderscheid announced Martinson's hiring Thursday morning. "Henry is a person of integrity and will foster positive experiences for our players through the game of basketball," Manderscheid said. Martinson is an employee for the Marion Public Services Department. And this prep baseball story by Cully Klein, correspondent from Lisbon. Lone Senior leads the way for Lynx in a sweep. Youth was front and center in a battle of Tri-Rivers Conference division leaders last night. Class 1A number 2 North Lynn bounced back from their first loss of the season, running away with an 11-2 victory over Lisbon in the first game of a twin bill. In the nightcap, the Lynx erased a one-run deficit with four runs in the final frame and won 6-3. The Lynx at 19-1 dropped a Wednesday night contest to Class 2A number 5 Dyersville Beckman. North Lynn starts an 8th grader, 3 sophomores, and 4 juniors. Lisbon countered with 7 sophomores. But the lone senior taking the field stood tall. Catcher Alex Sturbaum is second on the team, hitting at a .500 clip, and is second in RBIs with 21. After a trip to the Class 2A state semifinals a year ago, Sturbaum is the bridge between North Lynn's past and current success. "It's been a great experience for everybody, especially me," Sturbaum said. "It's just been a lot of good times, enjoying every moment of it." Sturbaum came through with key hits at the plate and guided the big pitches on the mound. A 2-RBI single broke open game one. He helped orchestrate Austin Hilmer's 8 strikeout performance behind the plate and through a would-be base stealer. "I absolutely love our pitching staff," Sturbaum said. "They're amazing. Sometimes they call me off, but they do a very good job of holding runners and pitching a good game." For good measure, his 7th inning triple in game 2 brought home the go-ahead run. Lisbon pitcher Tyler Scott kept the Lynx off balance for 6 innings. Sturbaum connected off reliever Alex Bock, blasting a line drive to center. "He's special," Hilmer said. "He really helps us out. Having one senior, he's got to be the leader. He does a great job of it, and we're lucky to have him." Sturbaum, who hit .306 as a junior, is having a final season to remember. Moving now to the Business 380 page, this local story by Caleb McCullough. NuboCo partners with microlending platform. NuboCo and a San Francisco-based not-for-profit have begun a statewide lending hub for entrepreneurs called Kiva, Iowa. The loans can range from $1,000 to $15,000, according to the Kiva, Iowa website. The not-for-profit Kiva US offers access to a platform for small loans with no interest, extended grace periods, and zero fees to businesses and individuals that can have difficulty obtaining loans from traditional lenders. It also facilitates crowdfunding. Small and new businesses can have a hard time securing loans because of a low credit score or other barriers, according to a news release from NuboCo. The partnership will fill a gap in access to funding for entrepreneurs, especially women and people of color, the release said. NuboCo's Caitlin Byers will be capital access manager for the new program. Information about Kiva, Iowa can be found at nubo.co/Kiva. Based in Cedar Rapids, the NuboCo offers programming and support for entrepreneurs and small business owners. And Hy-Vee debuts financial services. Kiosks have been installed in 210 Hy-Vee venues so potential customers can view the financial services options. West Des Moines-based grocery chain Hy-Vee has launched an online financial and insurance business. Hy-Vee Financial Services features products such as checking and savings accounts, auto and home insurance, home mortgages, consumer loans, and pet insurance. The program is through its subsidiary, Midwest Heritage Bank, also based in West Des Moines, and its financial products can be found on the bank's website. Life and health insurance plans are to be rolled out later this year, the retailer said. By leveraging our ownership of our subsidiary, Midwest Heritage, we are able to serve our customers in a new way that meets those needs, while also bringing more value to our Hy-Vee Fuel Saver Perks and Hy-Vee Plus members, Hy-Vee Chairman and CEO and President Randy Etiker said in a news release on Thursday. Kiosks also have been installed in 210 Hy-Vee venues, so customers can view the services. Moving now to the living page, surviving soaring summer temperatures. This is a Mayo Clinic News Network release. When the weather is blistering hot, Dr. David Claypool, a Mayo Clinic emergency medicine physician, says you need to listen to your body. What start out as heat cramps can quickly move to heat exhaustion and then heat stroke when the body loses the ability to regulate and cool itself down, said Claypool. He reminds people that they should begin the day hydrated and keep hydrated throughout the day. If you feel hot but develop chills, that's a clear sign you need to slow down and seek cool air or water. Heat stroke is a condition caused by your body overheating, usually as a result of prolonged exposure to or physical exertion in high temperatures. This most serious form of heat injury, heat stroke, can occur if your body temperature rises to 104 degrees or higher. Heat stroke requires emergency treatment. Untreated heat stroke can quickly damage your brain, heart, kidneys, and muscles. The damage worsens the longer treatment is delayed, increasing your risk of serious complications or death. Heat stroke signs and symptoms include high body temperature, a core body temperature of 104 degrees or higher, obtained with a rectal thermometer, is the main sign of heat stroke. Altered mental state or behavior, confusion, agitation, slurred speech, irritability, delirium, seizures, and coma can all result from heat stroke. Alteration in sweating. In heat stroke brought on by hot weather, your skin will feel hot and dry to the touch. However, in heat stroke brought on by strenuous exercise, your skin may feel dry or slightly moist. Nausea and vomiting. You may feel sick to your stomach or vomit. Flushed skin. Your skin may turn red as your body temperature increases. Rapid breathing. Your breathing may become rapid and shallow. Racing heart rate, your pulse may significantly increase because heat stress places a tremendous burden on your heart to help cool your body, and your head may throb. If you think a person may be experiencing heat stroke, seek immediate medical help. Call 911 or your local emergency services number. Take immediate action to cool the overheated person while waiting for emergency treatment, and get the person into shade or indoors. Remove excess clothing. Cool the person with whatever means available. Put them in a tub of cool water or a cool shower. Spray with a garden hose or sponge with cool water. Fan while misting with cool water or place ice packs or cold, wet towels on the person's head, neck, armpits, and groin. Heat exhaustion is one of the heat-related syndromes. Syndromes range in severity from mild heat cramps to heat exhaustion, to potentially life-threatening heat stroke. Heat exhaustion can begin suddenly or over time, usually after working or playing in the heat, perspiring heavily, or being dehydrated. Heat exhaustion signs and symptoms include cool, moist skin with goosebumps when in the heat, or heavy sweating, faintness, dizziness, fatigue, weak, rapid pulse, low blood pressure when standing, muscle cramps and nausea, a headache, stop all activity and rest, move to a cooler place, drink cool water or a sports drink, and contact your healthcare provider if your signs or symptoms worsen or if they don't improve within 1 hour. If you are with someone showing signs of heat exhaustion, seek immediate medical attention if he or she becomes confused or agitated, loses consciousness, or is unable to drink. You will need immediate cooling and urgent medical attention if your core body temperature reaches 104 or higher. Returning now to the Iowa Today page for some more news stories. From the Gazette, condo fire in Coralville causes $100,000 in damage. Damage is estimated at $100,000 from a Wednesday fire at a Coralville condominium. Firefighters responded to a fire at 308 First Avenue about 6:30 p.m., according to the fire department news release. Property records show Riverview Plaza condominiums at that address. A Coralville City police officer activated the fire alarm, and everyone in the complex got out safely on their own. Firefighters found flames and heavy smoke coming from the roof. They were able to contain the fire to the roof and one unit and extinguish the fire in about 30 minutes. The cause of the fire was ruled accidental, but the investigation continues. And fire explosion forces evacuation of two homes in Marshalltown. An early morning house fire and subsequent explosion Thursday in Marshalltown forced the evacuation of two homes, authorities said. The fire was reported at 2:15 a.m. Thursday, and police arrived to see flames coming from one home, officials said. Within minutes, an explosion occurred that intensified the fire and spread the flames to the home next door. Officers were able to alert the occupants of the second home and get them safely out of the house. Firefighters later confirmed that the occupants of both houses were safe. Both homes suffered extensive damage, according to reports. Authorities are investigating the cause of the fire and explosion. No violations found in the Cedar Rapids water in 2020. This story by Marissa Payne. The City of Cedar Rapids has published its annual water quality report for 2020, which provides a comprehensive look at the past year's drinking water quality. The city's drinking water had no violations. Regulated chemicals, including nitrate, arsenic, and fluoride, were all at acceptable levels, according to the report. The Cedar Rapids Water Division achieved 100% compliance with the Iowa DNR's water quality expectations during the year, according to a news release. The city sent the report to residents and businesses in the May issue of the Our CR magazine. Customers can learn more about city water quality by viewing the report online at cityofcr.com/water report or call customer service at 319-286-5900. And an Iowa company sees metal refinishing as an art form. This story by Elizabeth Kelsey. For Rich Conlon, there's nothing like the sense of achievement after he and his team have given a metal part a new lease on life. I just really enjoy seeing a part come in, a raw part, an unfinished part, and figuring out how to process it and send it out. And the satisfaction that, hey, we just did that, he said. Conlon's Dubuque business, Key City Plating, specializes in metal refinishing, particularly barrel and rack zinc electroplating, tin and nickel plating, and polishing. The finish on metal parts can serve multiple purposes, he said. Some customers need a certain thickness or finish on a certain part so it fits with a mating part, he said. Some use different colors of zinc plating to distinguish parts. Key City Plating also refinishes metal hardware from antiques, such as old cars. Additionally, it handles restoration and polishing of church hardware, such as candlesticks and tabernacles, which Conlon said is particularly challenging due to the piece's intricacy. The business's main focus, however, is what Conlon terms short-run, fast-turnaround work, small quantities of metal parts that need to be finished. A few boxes, a crate, he said. I don't want semi-loads of the same parts. That's for a big company with an automated line. Pretty much every run we do is a specialized run for a component. It's mostly more of an art form. He said that other nearby plating services in place, such as Milwaukee and the Quad Cities, are larger production facilities that take an assembly line approach to handling large batches of the same part. This is efficient for large companies, but for smaller clients who need finishing for smaller batches, services like Key City Plating fill the gap. There are so many machine shops out there that are making products in small quantities, and they need a source to get this stuff finished, he said. The emphasis on small batches means Key City Plating's workload is varied, which is one of Conlon's favorite things about the job. There's no 2 days that the guys in the back are doing the same thing. A lot of times, within 2 hours, they're not doing the same thing. It keeps everybody on their toes, he said. Conlon's father, Jim, started the business in 1971, and Conlon assumed ownership around 2008. His uncle Paul, who started with Jim in 1971, was the operations manager at Key City Plating until about a year ago, allowing Conlon to focus on his second business, Complete Off-Road, which restores and customizes off-road vehicles. Now that Paul has retired, Conlon is the operations manager of both companies. The businesses are in a nearly 17,000-square-foot building with a garage for Complete Off-Road and a separate area for Key City Plating, including a showroom and office space. Conlon grew up around the business and has worked there since seventh grade. The workspace is small, 5 employees, including himself. But they are a close-knit group, he said. I've got guys that have been down here since the early 70s, and a couple of the guys grew up next door to me when I was a kid. Not only has he developed strong relationships with his employees, but Conlon has built partnerships with local production machine companies, such as Dubuque Screw Products. Billy Scher, who works in production control and expediting for Dubuque Screw, said his company has worked closely with Key City Plating for as long as he can remember. Ever since I was a little kid, I've worked here, and we've always been doing work here, said Scher, whose grandfather, Robert, co-founded Dubuque Screw in 1946. Scher said his family's business has benefited from the quick turnaround and high-quality work that Key City Plating delivers. They're able to turn this work extremely quickly and add value to the service, he said. A quick recap of the weather ahead in the Cedar Rapids and Iowa City area. Partly cloudy for today with winds out of the north at 5 to 15. Cedar Rapids looking for a high of 88 and a low of 64. Our normal high is 83. Our normal low is 61. We set a record of 99 in 1913, a record low of 46 in 1950. We have 15 hours and 14 minutes of daylight today with sunset at 8:45. Sunrise tomorrow is at 5:31 a.m. And as the weather turns more active, severe weather will become more common in the coming months. It's always important to have multiple ways to receive severe weather information. A weather radio, the KCRG First Alert weather app, or broadcast television or battery-operated radio are all necessary. Two words to become familiar with are watch and warning, according to meteorologist Joe Winters. A watch means conditions are favorable for the development of severe weather. Watches are usually issued several hours in advance of anything severe. A warning means something is happening or has been detected on radar and you need to seek safe shelter. That does it for today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today. I've been your reader, Kathleen. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thanks for listening and have a great, safe day.